Verdugo back to the pen. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the TC and Company podcast. Tom Caron with you here at Fenway Park in Boston. As we watch the Red Sox go through their workout before traveling to Houston tomorrow. Incredibly, the Red Sox are still standing, getting ready for the American League Championship Series after a stunning ALDS win over the Tampa Bay Rays. They lost game one of that series 5-0. Took a 2-0 lead in the first inning of the second game, a grand slam and 5 runs in the bottom half. They're down 5-2, and from that point on, the Red Sox stole the show. Back-to-back walk-off wins for the first time since the 2004 ALCS against the New York Yankees. And that sends them to this next round. Going to be so many storylines between the Red Sox and the Astros. Going to be a lot of talk about the 2017 sign-stealing scheme. Alex Cora obviously paying a big price for that. Suspended for a year. Then brought back to manage the Red Sox this year. Chaim Bloom, ownership, everyone agreeing at the end of the process that there was no one better equipped to help the Red Sox bounce back from a last place finish in 2020. One of the worst seasons by win-loss in the history of the franchise. And sure enough, Cora managing this team to this step, 4 wins away from an appearance in the World Series. I spoke with President and CEO Sam Kennedy about bringing Cora back, why he was the right man for the job, and about these incredible crowds that we have seen here at Fenway Park, starting with the wild card game against the New York Yankees, then the 2 home games against the Tampa Bay Rays. Sam Kennedy, President and CEO of the Red Sox, on the TC and Company podcast.
Do you remember the first time you met Travis?
I do. I was fortunate enough to meet Travis in one of his favorite places in the world, and that was at a game at Fenway Park. I remember Larry Cancro, a longtime Red Sox executive, proud BU alum, introducing me to Travis and his parents. And I, of course, knew of Travis growing up in the region as a high school hockey player. You know, hearing his story, it just hit home for all of us. And so it's great to meet him at Fenway. And of course, he moved into the Back Bay because he wanted to be close to Fenway. So we were able to see him on and off coming into the ballpark, and just a great energy, great smile, and became such an important part of our organization.
I know what you guys did meant so much to him and the family, and I've had so many conversations with Travis over the years, but it seemed that the best conversations I ever had with him were at JetBlue Park, that weekend of the casino. He would always be out on the field with his mom and dad, and it was just a time where, you know, you guys invited him there every year, not to speak, not to do, you know, and he was just a guest. And I think so often Travis had to be on, right? Because he was
Absolutely.
Speaking in a room.
Yeah.
I think every year that was a little weekend where he just got to be Travis the Red Sox fan and Travis the New Englander. And those were moments. I know you had conversations with him like that as well. Not everybody got to have those moments with Travis. And even behind the curtain, what a special, charismatic, inspirational guy he was.
Yeah, he was just an amazing person, and to have him at spring training, just as you say, TC, in an informal way, was just such a great annual tradition. And you're right, we purposely didn't invite him down there to speak or get the team fired up, because he's one of the best public speakers I've ever witnessed. I've seen him do that many times. But yeah, he would just come down to Fort Myers with the family, enjoy the good weather, enjoy the Red Sox being in first place at the time every March, and really enjoyed it. Our clients who we would invite down, and broadcast partners and community partners, sort of looked at it as a family reunion every March. So he'll be missed every spring training moving forward. But yeah, it was a great weekend to have those casual conversations, and he was just a part of the Red Sox family on those occasions, and it was a special, special time.
You think about spending the first 20 plus years of your life towards one goal, and you achieve that goal, but it changes everything. And you know, we do this special, we do this documentary. It could be all about the tragedy of that moment. Instead, it's about an incredible life. It's a special person who can take that moment and turn it into a cause that has helped so many others.
I think when New Englanders look back on Travis, they will remember the more important part of his life, which was the second half of his life post that tragic night, 11 seconds into his career. And they will look at him as one of the most inspirational figures in the history of New England sports. There have been so many, but no one was dealt as difficult a hand of cards as Travis. And so for him to become this inspirational figure and to remind all of us to never take any moment for granted, you know, I remember hearing him talk about what it was like to lace up his skates and just the sound of the laces crossing over each other and the blade hitting the ice, and you know, bringing me back to some of his speeches that we were fortunate enough to hear. There was nobody like him, and to turn what happened into such a positive and to raise as much money as he did. Incredible person. I think about Travis, I think about Pete Frates and so many others that we've been fortunate enough to meet, but his legacy is just huge.
You got to know Lee and Brenda, you got to know the family, such an incredible family. I mean, it's, you wouldn't wish anyone to go through anything like Travis went through, but the support network he had before the world came pouring in to support him, from that moment on, you can understand how that family meant so much.
Well, you know this, TC, as a hockey parent, both of us have lived it with our own kids, and there's something really special about that community. You know, all those early mornings, late nights, cold hockey rinks across New England, and the Roy family started off with Travis as a really young boy, supporting him, taking him around rink to rink, pursuing that goal, and then they were right there to support him until his final days in this endeavor. And it is just an amazing family, and they represent the very best of New England.
Could have been a street hockey tournament he had. Instead, it was a wiffle ball. It was mini Fenway. How cool is that? Is that it was connected to the Red Sox, and it became such a phenomenon up there.
It was so great to just see it every year. Everything that you did, TC, for it, to participate, to promote it on NESN. The Red Sox tried in our own little way to support it, get the word out with our Frozen Fenway events, with our Red Sox telecast, just to try and support this really important cause. But yeah, Travis chose a wiffle ball tournament. I think that showed his true passion and love for baseball and the Red Sox, and just an amazing gathering each and every year, and a tradition that has been remarkable. And obviously, we know that the foundation is going to be winding down, but to the extent that the Red Sox can support initiatives as we go forward, we'll always be there for the Roy family.
The fact that it's winding down is just a reminder one more time of who Travis was.
Yeah.
He didn't want anyone burdened with his legacy, though everyone would have jumped up to continue it and double the efforts, but he didn't want anyone 10 years from now, without him there to energize it, to have to deal with the responsibility. It's really incredible that he kind of saw that ahead.
It's remarkable. It speaks to Travis's humility and his selflessness. And those are the two words that I think about when I think about Travis. Everything he did for other people, his entire life became quickly dedicated to helping other people after something horrific happened to him. And when you judge someone's character, I don't think there's anything more important. So great reminder for all of us. And yeah, to think that he didn't want anyone to be burdened with what he created is just a remarkable testament to a great, great man.
You talked about he's a reminder to never take a moment for granted. You're a hockey dad. You ever have a conversation about Travis Roy?
All the time, and you know, you think about all of our kids that go out there on these rinks, all these other sports, you never take a moment for granted, and probably the best lesson that you can teach anyone.
What about his legacy? What do you think Travis's legacy will ultimately be?
You know, I think Travis's legacy will be one of giving back to others, the most important legacy any of us can have, how you treat other people, life's most important mission is to be giving back. You think of Jackie Robinson and what you do for other people. You think of Travis Roy. So I think about Travis, I'll think about that selflessness and helping other people just under unthinkable, extraordinary circumstances. There aren't enough adjectives to describe how amazing this person was and is, and his legacy will live forever.
Awesome. You good there?
Awesome.
Anything we missed, Steve?
No, we're all good.
Okay, let's keep you here for a minute if we can.
Let's do it.
I said the other night, no one saw this coming. Sam Kennedy, did you see this coming?
Well, we saw at spring training, we saw a life and energy and sort of a renewed excitement around Alex Cora's return. That's well documented. I do remember Alex speaking with me and others a lot in March and April and May. We got a good team. We got to understand. And that's what you get with Alex Cora. You get positivity. You get excitement. But no, nobody saw this coming. I know we had an exceptional first half. We feel like, we sort of came back to reality in the second half, largely a 500 team. Such a resilient group. When I think of 2021, I think about those games against Baltimore and Washington, which we really needed to win each and every one of them to sort of punch our ticket and get in. Obviously, we made it difficult. But then when the New York Yankees showed up here on that Tuesday night, everything changed. Our fans were there from pitch one. Bogey hits that home run, and it's like, let's go. Let's get this thing going, and the group hasn't stopped since. So now, let's keep this thing going. We got eight more.
From the first pitch of Aldi threw in that game against the Yankees, this crowd has been electric.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I mean, you got to go back to maybe 13, game six, right, when Victorino hit one off the wall. Yeah. The place shook about as loud. Maybe before that. I mean, this crowd has been on every pitch.
It's a great point. It is definitely recency bias. You tend to remember things a little bit better, especially as we get older, things that happened more recently. But I go all the way back to 2002, and I think about 03, 04, and the energy inside of Fenway, at least as my memory serves, was more nervous energy because of the 84, 85, 86 years, constantly being beat, constantly having heartache with either the Yankees or the Mets or the Cincinnati Reds. And so 03, 04, I wouldn't classify the vibe inside of Fenway as intense. There was excitement, there was nervousness, there was exhilaration and certain moments, but the intensity at Fenway Park in 2021 has been unlike anything I can remember in our time here, and that's a credit to these fans. And as you say, it was from pitch one. Our fans on their feet, almost willing the 2021 Boston Red Sox to get this thing going and to take care of the Yankees. And that is just, as a Boston fan, that energy has been incredible. I talked to Matt Barnes on the field the other night. He felt the same against the Rays, obviously an incredible team. So now it's up to all of us to keep this thing going.
The extra innings the other night, I mean, you can always go to moments. Vasquez hits a walk-off home run, the place goes nuts, right? Obviously, I talked about Victorino in 13. But I thought every pitch Pivetta threw, I looked up at one point and I hit somebody and said, there's not a person here looking at their phones.
Yeah.
And think about that in 2021 anywhere.
That's right.
You had 38,000 leaning forward, urging him on, like you said. I thought those extra innings, they were so engaged on every pitch. You don't see that every day in professional sports anymore.
No, you don't. We've become an industry that, has to deal with this sort of secondary or first device now. All of us are guilty of it. We're connected to our phones. But to be in the moment, to be at a live event, to be so connected to what's happening on the field is remarkable. People talk a lot about the length of baseball games or the pace of play. I don't think anybody was talking about pace of play or length of game. I'm a parent to teenagers, and a lot of their friends told me, look, we want this game to go all night. This is great. This is what it's all about. So, yeah, the intensity, the electricity, the connection to the team, and especially Nick Pivette. I can't say enough about that performance. I mean, boy, he really stepped up when we needed it most. I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. We needed help. That bullpen needed help, and he was there to step up and deliver.
It's the Astros, so there's going to be a lot of 2017 talk in the days leading up to it. You were a big part of the decision to bring Alex Cora back this year. I know how you feel about him. I know how we all feel about him. Why was he the right guy? Understanding that this story was going to circle overhead in the spring and it's going to happen again now in the fall. But why, despite that, was he still the right guy?
Well, first of all, Alex Cora has been one of the most important figures within the Red Sox organization dating back to the early 2000s when he was with us as a player. So when we had him as a player, he was the most accountable, reliable, organization-wide figure in terms of things we were trying to do in the community, winning on the field. When we saw him emerge as a coach, we knew in post-playing days, we knew he was on our list, and we wanted to try and bring him back to the organization. We watched what they did to us in 2017 across the field, and we thought, boy, we got to get Alex Cora back to the Red Sox organization if there's ever a chance. That chance came prior to 2018. That season speaks for itself. And then when all of the news came out about what had happened in 17, we knew that it was best. He knew it was best, and we knew it was best to part ways. And then he obviously served the suspension. Huge credit to John Henry and Tom Werner and Mike Gordon, because while many of us were passionate about bringing him back after him sort of serving that suspension, I think some ownership groups would be hesitant, but this is an ownership group that believes in forgiveness. And Alex, it starts with the individual. He has been the most accountable person involved with the 2017 affair, and he apologized for it. He owned up to it. He apologized to us, to the Astros, to the fans, to his family. He's still apologizing for it. He's talked about it the other night. And I just think that says a lot about him. We've all made mistakes in our lives, and he apologized. He served a big price for Alex Cora to be put on the sidelines and watching baseball for a year, torture for him. So we accepted his apology. We're appreciative that he acknowledged it, how we handled it. So it was a pretty easy decision from ownership, from our perspective, to bring him back. Of course, we needed to have Haim and BOH and Raquel and Eddie run their process, and obviously we were very glad the process led them to Alex being the right guy and coming back, and thank goodness he's here.
Watching what he does now and watching what he did in October 2018, he's never lost a series. He's 5-for-5 in elimination moments. But he takes a bullpen. Matt Barnes, Sauer Murrah were two of the most important relievers in the first half. To begin the last round, they weren't on the roster. Like, he will put guys in. Pivetta, you talked about. You plug guys in. Nobody does that better than Alex Cora.
You know, I learned early on in my career from a mentor that, you know, there are basically two kinds of people in the world. This is not an original thought, but there are people that give you energy and make you feel confident and able to perform at a high level. And then there are other people who suck the life out of you, who take energy from you. And the advice that I've always gotten and try to give to other people is spend as much time as you can around the people that give you that positive energy. Alex Cora is the ultimate energy provider, positive energy provider. In my mind, he makes everyone around him better. He makes everyone around him feel included in the organization. That's a sign of an exceptional leader. We were in Tampa, and I was listening to him and Tech and Haim and Eddie and Raquel, and everyone discussed the roster and the moves that we needed to make, which were not easy decisions. And to watch Alex observe the dialogue, the debate, the conversation, participate, you know, he really wants that feedback. And then to handle those decisions the way he handled them, hard thing to do, to go and talk to a player who might not be making a postseason roster after giving their heart and soul to the organization. that's a really hard thing. The way you handle those conversations is so important, and I haven't seen anybody better in those situations than Alex Cora.
I do got to ask you about Chaim Bloom as well, because if you were unfortunate enough to listen to any sports talk radio on August 1st, this season was over. You were becoming a small market team. You'd never have a $100 million payroll again. And here we are. Kyle Schwarber has been one of the most important guys. Robles, it's been up and down, but he's been terrific for the most part in these postseason runs. Chaim Bloom, I think, I think that a lot of people, and he'll never ask for it, but oh, Chaim Bloom in a pulse. Because he said all along, yeah, we got to get the pipeline better. We got to improve the farm system. And you did. You went from 20th to 9th in one ranking while getting to the American League Championship Series. That's hard to do on those two fronts.
Very hard to do, and I think the the reason why we went hard after Chaim Bloom was because of the perspective he brought from being a part of different organizations to Raquel and Eddie and Brian O'Halloran's credit. They were really interested in bringing, all of us have been here for 20 years together, they were very interested in bringing a slightly different perspective to the organization. And he, from what we knew of Chaim, it seemed like he would fit like a glove. After now working with him for a couple of years, he more than fits like a glove. He brings a very different perspective, different experience, and he and his team of baseball ops officials and Alex Cora work beautifully together. And the great thing about him is, he grew up in outside of Philadelphia. He could take it. He could take a punch. He really is sticking to the organization's plan of building up what we hope to be a team that is competitive year in and year out. We're not going to sacrifice longer-term future value for near-term value unless we absolutely have to in that moment. And what we are trying to do now is the hardest thing in professional sports. We're trying to stay competitive each and every year and build for that long-term goal 3, 4, 5, 7 years down the line. There are organizations that we admire and respect that are doing it. Chaim came from one of those organizations. So it's been terrific. Yes, he's taken a lot of heat, as have the players and Alex Cora. They really are able to block that out and focus on the job at hand, and you're seeing that play out right now. But they also recognize this job is not done yet. We've got a ways to go, and no one's cracking the champagne other than the one night of celebrating. Every celebration, you think, let's not go too crazy. And somehow everyone just goes crazy. And I do think that's a reflection of how hard it is. It is so hard to get to the playoff game and the division series. And so hopefully the celebrations will build as we go forward.
I'll ask you finally. I always think, you got it done a little early, so you had time off. Great for the players. A lot of guys will recover and be stronger. Not always great for the front office. You kind of sit around and analyze this thing 20 different ways over these 4 days. Do you make predictions? How do you handle going into each of these rounds?
Well, in the postseason, we all become travel agents and ticket brokers, and there's just so many logistical issues with Major League Baseball and our broadcast partners and the players' families, and so lots and lots of issues that come up. So frankly, we needed this. I mean, Mark Cacciatore, our amazing traveling secretary, was down on the field the other night, and I just knew. I saw him coming towards me, and I knew what he was going to say, which is, he didn't care what anyone, he was the happiest person inside of Fenway Park that we didn't have to go back to Tampa because of all the associated logistical issues. So the players needed this break. We needed this break. Of course, it's not a break, but we needed this time to get ready for the American League Championship Series. We'll be ready to go Friday night in Houston, and then games 3, 4, and 5 here at Fenway next week. But there's a lot that goes into it, so it's great to have a little bit of time.
I'll ask you to wrap it up back with the fans. A year ago, coming off a really disappointing season, nobody saw a game in person. Well, one guy did, but we won't get into that. They go out and set
that's right.
One guy. Yeah, attendance of one in 2020.
That's right.
But zero paid attendance. And then, you start this year with restrictions, and we get the variant over the second half. There's been a lot going on. And yet we're talking here about some of the biggest, most electric crowds that we have seen in years. What do you say to the fans who have clearly now, whether they were slow to come along or not, and no doubt a lot of them walked away from you in mid-September, okay, but 3 weeks later, they are back.
Yeah.
What do you say to the fans who through this whole roller coaster now have been partying on the street the last week?
We just say thank you, and it's sincere and genuine, and especially following 2020. I mean, it impacted us in so many ways, and we're still fighting COVID. We're still bad, as evidenced by the episode that we had in the clubhouse. You know, the other night, TC, I was sitting in here, and my family was here, and I was actually taking, I took an iPhone video in the third or fourth inning when the crowd was just electric, and my teenage kids were like, "Dad, you don't post, you know, what are you doing?" And I said, I just want this video of this electricity and this packed house to remind myself this winter, no matter what happens, of how fortunate we are to have Fenway Park full again, life and energy. It means so much more than baseball. I mean, what we went through in 2020 with the closures and the lockdowns, and people lost their jobs and businesses went under. You said it, we opened this season with 12% capacity. And here we are in October with 38,000 people shoulder to shoulder going crazy. And it's just something you never want to take for granted. So I wanted that video for a cold, stormy night in January to just be able to look back and remember, you know, how fortunate we are, and keep that goal of October baseball always front in our minds.
So I'm joined now by Bob Bradford of WEEI and WEEI.com. Interesting conversation with Sam Kennedy, who's, you know, for him to say that it was the most impactful crowd he's seen in his 20 years here, and an interesting contrast between the nervous energy he said you got in 03 and 04 back in those days when they were waiting for things to go bad, and how the team can kind of lift, or the fans can kind of lift the team now. It is an interesting distinction, because we've seen that energy before, but it is a much more positive energy that you see from the crowd now, isn't it?
Yeah, we were wondering, first of all, it's an honor to be with you. We were wondering if it was going to carry over, the whole demographic situation, how lively it had been all year, all of it, and it did. I mean, especially with the Yankees here, the crowd. Like, I know that Alex Cora came out and said that the other crowds were better than the Yankees crowd, but it wasn't, and the players said that. That Yankees crowd will always go down as the one that separated itself. So, and it has been a real effect, and I thought after that Yankees crowd that the fans would take it upon themselves, and you know how it works here, the fans would take it upon themselves to say, okay, you know what, we have stories written about us, this is our thing, we're going to make this a very impactful environment, and I think it was. And the other part about this, TC, is that I was just talking to Schwarber about his, you know, tipping the hat thing, and it made me realize, you know, everybody's, like you said, like, is so wound up, and you don't realize how wound up you are until that moment comes, and then everyone's like, oh yeah, I remember, this is a game, oh, that's right, yeah. So it's a great conversation, the crowd stuff, it's been great.
Well, and it speaks to, when you talk about Schwarber, it speaks to the veteran leadership of this group, right? I mean, Schwarber, Hernandez bring a different, Renfro, a whole different world of playoff experience, but you got a core here that did it in 2018. And Schwarber told me before the series was over, I think it was before game four, he said, you know, not a lot of teams, after giving up that grand slam in the first inning of game two and being shut out in game one, he goes, a lot of teams are done. He goes, that's really hard to come back from. It would have been easy to pack it in. And it says something, and it starts with AC. Obviously, Alex Cora going up and down the line saying, a lot of game left. Stay one chip away at one swing at a time. But I don't know, without the veteran experience in the postseason this team has, that they can come back from that.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to hear some of them say how they knew, you know, first of all, how the Yankees game was the game where they're like, okay, we're a good team. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but we're a good team and we can make a run at this. And then they talk about that game of the losing the first game and getting drubbed in that game, but hitting some balls hard. But I think what you're talking about, which is coming back from the Grand Slam, because they knew they were a good team. They had still had that stench of the Yankees game on them where like, hey, you know what? we know we're good, and we know we can come back. It's not like we're all struggling here. And I think you need veterans to do this. This is another thing, TC, is that every team is different, but you do need veterans, man. Like, you do need – there's a reason that 2013 team won, because they were all, like, 33 years old. I don't think they were the most talented team, but they knew the stuff that you were talking about.
This team's like the 13 team. I mean, you know, Schwarber is Johnny Gomes, and where do you want to go? You know, Kike Hernandez is Shane Victorino, and Hunter Renfro is Mike Napoli. I mean, there are similarities. You know, veteran guys who didn't blow you away. Nobody was jumping up and down on the free agent signings. But you bring these guys together, and there's a confidence that would have been hard to rebuild after the woeful 2020 season without those guys coming in.
Yeah, and the other thing is they, like you said, they're all newcomers. Or not all newcomers, but there's a lot of newcomers. That was – you lived through that offseason. It was you're signing Shane Victorino and Mike Napoli and David Ross and Ryan Dempster. I thought you were going to sign Josh Hamilton. What's going on? Where's the big ticket item?
Bridge here,
yeah. Like, oh, we have to go through this again. But it felt sort of the same way here, you know, Renfro and, you know, go down to Kike Hernandez and all these guys. And you're right. I mean, I think there's a lot of analogies to be drawn. And you know, and also believing in him. Like, the crowd in the city of Boston, what people don't forget about that 2013 teams, and I don't know if the Nesson ratings bear this out, but what I remember is that people not fully buying into that team until the Dodge at Los Angeles at the end of August. And because you had a good start, good for you, Johnny Gomes, for scoring from second and opening day. But then you had the Bruins made a run. And then, believe it or not, you had the Aaron Hernandez stuff going on, which took all the attention away. And then they were okay. But then you go out west and you play the Giants and you play a really, really good Dodgers team. And when they came back, that was like, okay, here we go. And I felt like that way. Like, and it took a little bit longer, I think, with this group, because the doubts with this group lasted until through Baltimore.
Until the Washington series?
Till Sunday, to the last day of the year, right?
Yeah, game 160.
Yes, I mean, and so, and you know, and that's, it is crazy. Like, it's another thing that, you know, Nathan Eovaldi was on the radio, and another thing he said that I thought hit home was, when, you know, they went through, first of all, him admitting that they were upset over the trade deadline, which I thought was interesting. Second of all, it was then they had all been separated from each other because of COVID. And the act of coming together, which, again, wasn't until the very end of the season, was like, hey, everybody, nice to meet you again. Now we can go out and win the World Series. That was another dynamic.
Sam Kennedy talked about nervous energy. I've been here a long time, so I have nervous energy. You've been here a long time. You probably still have some nervous energy. My worry, okay, as a fan, not as an impartial broadcaster who has to tell it like it is that there's too much time off, right? Like, they pop champagne in Washington. They don't have to go to four-game scenarios, four-way tie scenarios, right? They roll into the wild card game against the Yankees. They beat the Yankees. They pop champagne again. They're on a plane the next day to Tampa. They're down. They rally. They come back. They pop champagne. All of a sudden, they've had 4 days to talk about the ALCS. To people ask them how good they are. Is there any concern that whatever mojo was built up over the last 10 days starts to fade away before this Astros series?
I like you personally. I respect your opinion. But I don't buy that at all. And I think it's just the opposite, because I think these guys were totally spent. I think that you could see that in the celebration, you know, the emotions after that. I think, and Tanner Houck said this, he's like, the last 48 hours were like, he's exhausted. I think there was a lot of that going on. So it was, maybe I'm wrong, but I do feel like they needed a breather. And I think they still have the confidence that carried over from the Yankees and the Rays. And you're going to need it, because you can't go in running on fumes against this Astros team, man. This is, you know, I don't know where the TC power rankings have the Astros, but they may be the most talented team.
I agree. Oh, no, I think you should worry about the Astros. I really wanted to be able to talk about Tony La Russa tomorrow and make that the big storyline for the ALCS, but it's not going to happen now. And listen, this Yeah, these teams know each other, right? And there's going to be so much talk about 17 and so much talk about Cora and the Astros and the back and forth. But I just think when you get rid of all that, that lineup is as scary as any in baseball with the Red Sox right there with them. You want to talk offensive power rankings. These are two of the best offenses. So I think it's going to be who scores more runs. Well, that's not really a deep thought, is it? But that's my prediction. The team that scores more runs. It's going to win this game. But I do think I think the pitchers are going to get hit. I think even the best pitching against these two lineups is going to pay the price. So can you limit the damage? And we've seen the Red Sox do that. This bullpen limits damage when things start to get going on the other side.
Yeah, I hate to agree with you, but I agree with you. And I think that you look back at when they played the Astros before and how striking it was. You know, first of all, you don't know that the casual baseball fans don't know a lot of their arms, and they're good arms. It's sort of like Tampa in that respect, like really, really good arms. And then we know some of the key players. But what I remember about that series was Rafi Devers. How, remember, that was a series where here's 50 straight fastballs, go try to hit them. To me, that's a big story. That is a big deal. We saw what a difference he made where, you know, he hits those couple home runs with one arm or whatever he's working with, but he can't be that way again. He can't. It makes such a huge difference when he's the playoff Rafi Devers.
Okay, so give me a surprise superstar, surprise breakout star, surprise star from the Red Sox in this series. Yeah, we know Devers and Bogarts, and we know Kike's been hot, and we know Schwarber. So give me somebody who's I'm just going to whittle off the entire team. Yeah, you can go back to one of them if you want. But who's going to be the surprise star of this series?
Okay, I got a good one for you. Like, I could have gone the easy route and just not and mentioned someone, one of the two players that you didn't mention in your diatribe.
Diatribe.
Yeah, whatever. I could have come up with a better word. Chris Sale. Yeah, right. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks, Chris Sale. So,
as a starter or reliever?
Well,
or both.
He's going to start. He's going to start. I think as a starter. And, well, he's going to start. And Alex Cora said that. And, like, this made no sense. These people are like, I don't want to see Chris Sale ever again. Well, do you want to win the World Series? Because science would suggest that you can't get there unless he pitches one good game. And I do think he has a good start in him. And you know, maybe there'll be another Rafflete. He was going to come in the ninth inning if they were ahead last game. So, but, you know, I think that's a good one, right, Chris?
That's a good one. And I'm gonna tell you mine, even though you didn't ask. I got Kevin Plawecki, because okay. He's going to catch Nate Eovaldi twice, right? So we know he's going to be in there twice. He's going to hit a big home run here at some point in this series.
That's a good one. I mean, you have to factor in how much he's going to catch. He's going to catch. You remember, I always like to cite this example. Do you remember who caught the first two playoff games in 2018? Well, it was Sandy Leon, you know, and I think they've come around to the idea of Plawecki catches this guy, Plawecki catches that guy, and Christian, take nothing away from Christian Vasquez. And by the way, you're very fortunate because once you get past the starter, which is about an hour into the game, you're going to be switching catchers anyway. So it's a good one. Kudos to you.
Thank you. Your prediction for this series?
I'll go, you know, come on.
It's a Nesson podcast, by the way. Audience, work your audience here. Let's go. I'll make the question easier. What does your heart want in this series? Can we go with that? We'll disconnect the brain of Rob Radford for a moment. The baseball brain gets put aside. What does your heart tell you?
Well, first of all, I don't have a heart anymore. As I told Garrett Whitlock after the game the other night, try to explain to him, this is my compliment to him, this weird, in a weird way. I said, you know, and this is like in the middle of the celebration, but I felt the need to bare my soul. I said, people ask you, you know, you raised here, do you root for the Red Sox? I'm like, I root for the time of game and I root for good people, right? And you're a good person, so I root for you.
Aww.
All right? You're a good person too. I root for you.
You root for me?
Yeah, there you go.
You're rooting for me to stop this podcast, is what you do.
No. So I'll give you an answer. So what is my prediction in how many games the Red Sox are going to win?
Yes. Yes, let's start with that. If the Red Sox were to win this series, how many games would it take?
I think it'll be seven. I think it'll be seven. And now, every we get to a seventh game, we're going to have guys with limbs hanging off. But still, I can see this going back and forth because I do think that the Red Sox have a huge advantage at one place. And you know where that place is. It is in the manager's chair. Yeah, I think it's huge. And And Dusty Baker's not a bad manager.
Never won a championship.
And, but especially in this landscape, you know, you're bobbing and weaving your way through, like, these games. We've seen it, like, little things like G-Man, when Josh Taylor, you know, bring out Tanner Houck to warm up, have G-Man Choi announced, and then bring in Josh Taylor, where Kevin Cash has to know that G-Man Choi is, like, 0 for 11 against Josh Taylor. But in Cash, and Cora played it better. I mean, and we've seen this for two postseasons now. I can't go against him.
All right, I've got the Red Sox in six. Ooh. Okay, and then here's my surprise, the unrequested prediction. The Braves upset the team from the West Coast, and game one of the World Series is here at Fenway Park. Home field advantage for the Red Sox. Can you imagine?
Yeah, that'll be good. Yes, for a lot of reasons, that would be good. But
truth be told, this is all, I'm just mapping out the easiest scenario for me and for us. Okay? It really has nothing to do with what I think will happen on the field. This is what I would like to happen. Is that safe?
Yeah, I would basically was rooting for the Red Sox to win game four so I didn't burn my travel budget. So, I think, you know, like, what scenario do I want to see? Will Fleming, oh my goodness, he – he wants to see the Giants and Red Sox. Yeah, I mean,
the Fleming showdown. Fleming
show, yeah, and I don't blame him for that. Yeah. But since I'm contractually obligated,
that would be the best thing for baseball. Red Sox Giants World Series.
Oh, I thought you meant the Fleming broadcast.
Yeah, that would be great for baseball too. But I mean, a Red Sox Giants World Series would be incredible with their fan bases and their history of struggles until recently. But don't you think? I mean, that would be the marquee. I mean, I guess Red Sox Dodgers would have the Mookie Betts story, and there's obviously storylines everywhere. But I think Red Sox Giants would be a really, really attractive World Series.
I think you're right in all respects, but I think that the most attractive would undeniably be Joe Kelly versus the Red Sox. So there you go.
I'll go with the Yastrzemski pick instead. Okay, so we wrap this up by saying, you know, who will really win when this is all said and done, Rob?
The great game of baseball, TC.
Indeed. The great Rob Bradford with me as we wrap up the TC and Company podcast, pre-ALCS edition. Thanks for listening.